That is Simply Focus with Elva Czerny and Dominic Gilda.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Simply Focus podcast, the good life approach, your podcast for life in joy and ease. I'm your host, Elva Czerny, together with my dear...
Dominic Gilda. Hi there.
And today, we are super honored and excited to have you, Victor Nelson, with us. Hi.
Good morning. I'm so glad to see you guys today.
Yeah, thank you for being here. You're in Santa Fe right now, right?
Yes. And where are you folks at?
We are in Victoria, or actually close to Victoria, and still have a great time here on Vancouver Island. Yesterday we went whale watching and saw orcas for the first time. It was just heart-touching, amazing, and wonderful. And here in Victoria, they have residential orcas and transit orcas. So the transit orcas are the traveling orcas traveling from Alaska down the whole American coast.
Right.
And while we yesterday saw two transit orcas, which was quite special to the guys on the boat as well. So that was really cool. And they were like just flowing together, and they were so simultaneously and you know, connected. That was just amazing.
We saw T-125A and T-126.
I will keep a note of this because you are inspiring me. Rana and I will be in British Columbia in August, and we are talking about going to Vancouver, and now we need to go whale watching and see if we can see the same pair.
Oh, that would be great. So let us know. Yeah, they've also been in Tofino for almost 2 weeks here in Vancouver Island and met a great family there. So Bibi became friends with their daughter. And the cool thing was they introduced us to the whole culture here. So we learned about s'mores on the fireplace. We had s'mores for the first time, which is actually crackers, marshmallow, and chocolate. Yeah, and they also introduced us to Nanaimo Bar. So if you come here to Vancouver Island, you definitely have to try a Nanaimo Bar, which is a chocolate bar with coconut in there, and it's really delicious if you like chocolate. So
yeah, a little.
Yeah.
So Vic, you started your professional career as a Lutheran pastor. You are a pastoral counselor and marriage and family therapist. You were a minister for 12 years. You had a fly fishing shop, so a lot of different things. You just told us that you did a lot of counseling at the fly fishing shop in Utah back then. You were a director of a counseling center in Santa Fe. You had one in Utah. You are in marriage family therapy and pastoral counseling since 1985. So this leads to our first question. What fascinates you with solution focus?
When in my training... because I was trained in a Jungian psychoanalytic model, the focus was on so much about problems. And somehow the person was the problem. We had to fix the person. And in family therapy, I did not want to label people or categorize people as a problem. And I became interested in solution-focused work because I was related to solution-focused work by marriage. Sarana, my wife, was actually studying and teaching solution-focused work. And so she was helping introduce me to leaders in the field at that time. Steve DeShazer, Insoo Kim Berg, and then a number of North American colleagues who worked together to actually develop the Solution-Focused Brief Therapy Association. But I became very interested in solution-focused work because it wasn't problem focus. We weren't trying to fix people. We were trying to help people use their resources in order to come up with their solutions.
That's beautiful, especially the part that you came to SF to solution focus via marriage. I like that.
Yeah. I was related by marriage. Yeah.
And this is what we can so much see, you know, just when we met you in Santa Fe and you introduced us to this culture there with this wonderful hotel where you had the SFBTA conference, but you hosted it twice, I think, or even.
That's correct.
Yeah. And just seeing Thorana and you interacting with each other, and it's not only work to you, solution focus, right?
Yeah. Well, it's become part of our life. It's become part of our philosophy, how we view the world. And it's interesting, in so many of my professional settings, just taking a solution-focused stance is unique for so many professionals. Let me give you one example. This morning, I had coffee with an Episcopal priest. I had invited him to come to our conference last November in Santa Fe, the solution-focused conference. So he came to a workshop on solution-focused pastoral care. It was really designed for people that were involved in religious communities or faith communities. Richard has been in ministry longer than I've been involved in ministry. So he started his ministry in the early 70s. I started in 1974. And this was an eye-opener for him after almost 45 years in ministry to look at spiritual issues from a solution-focused perspective. And it's just interesting to me how many professionals have not yet been exposed to thinking differently about how they could help either clients or colleagues, church members, think differently about how to generate solutions rather than just focusing on problems.
Mm-hmm. So you said that was kind of eye-opening for him to look on spiritual issues with a solution-focused stance. So what does that mean, or what do you do when you combine the spiritual view with solution-focused?
Yeah, let me give you an example about that, Elfie. When I was first learning about solution-focused work, I was actually working for my church office that oversaw almost 200 church congregations in the Intermountain West in the United States. So it included Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, New Mexico, and part of West Texas. So we had a very large geographical area. And a church had invited me, because I was doing church consultations for my church office, they had invited me to help them develop their mission statement that would be part of their long-range planning. And so I said, I'd be glad to do that. And they said, well, we're going to invite about 200 of our church members to come to this meeting. And I said, great, let's do that. And they said, well, how are you going to work with 200 people? And I said, I won't tell you now, but set people up in round tables where there would be 6 to 8 people at a table. So they had a large, large hall, and we had about 200 people. Here's how the evening went. I began with this question. No matter how long you have been affiliated with this church, whether it's 1 week or 20 years, think about when this church has been at its best, when you have had your most positive experience with this church. What were the elements that made it so great? And then I'd have each table talk about with each other what made the church great, just in that small group. Then each table would report back to a person who was writing all this down. So then I asked them the second question. When the church was not at its best, maybe when it was at its worst, and then you know what question people thought I was going to ask. Yeah. What made it so bad? No. I said, what enabled the church to get through that as well as it did? So again, they were looking at strengths, the positive characteristics, the elements that sustained the church through that. Again, each table would talk about that process. Then we reported that back. So then I said, as you look at these lists on, you know, all of the white pieces of paper around the room, in your table, have a conversation about what would be the 3 most important elements that you would like to carry forward in your church's ministry. So we had about a 2-hour meeting. People became so excited about their ministry and very optimistic about their future. And they reported it back to my bishop, whom I worked for. And we had a conversation at our staff meeting where we had about 8 of us that were on staff about this process. They were so interested in this idea of using solutions and looking at positive elements of ministry. So then there was a regional gathering of church staff. So we had 4 or 5 bishops and all of their staffs that came to a conference. They asked me to introduce this model. So I was able to walk them through the same process. And I'd never expected this, and I never had received it. I got applause for training bishops. Wow. They introduced a solution-focused way of working with church congregations. So I've been helping churches and consulting with churches ever since then, for the last 20 years, in occasional roles with them. And I always want to bring that solution-focused, strength-based, resource-based perspective to help them think more positively about how they move into their preferred futures.
What a nice story. The spirituality and solution focus is a question I'm thinking a lot about. So I'm very curious about this. So how do spirituality and solution focus connect for you personally?
Well, for me personally, my spirituality has been really evolving over my career and over my life, where I think more in terms of my preferred future, my best hopes. And it helps me move in a more spiritual or deeper direction if I'm focused on what my best hopes for my life, for my spiritual life, for my spiritual relationships. And because I'm teaching part-time at a local graduate school, my students are very open to transformative experiences and their own spirituality. So I've been introducing some of these ideas, even in the classroom, as they're studying to become counselors or art therapists, and helping them in their spiritual journeys just by introducing a philosophy, a perspective, a solution-focused stance that would help them take their steps into their preferred futures.
Yeah, thank you.
That's very much like I see Elfie doing it too.
In what way, Elfie? How would you apply that to yourself?
I think I had to start my spiritual journey to truly understand or get a deeper understanding or truly understand what solution focus can mean for me. And with starting the spiritual journey, I started into even deeper into my solution focus journey. So I was introduced to solution focus, I'd say really before I started my, you know, the spiritual journey in a way where I really thought about what does spirituality mean and really connecting to more than I am in a conscious way. Well, this was very helpful to get a better understanding what solution focus can do and mean for us. And this is for me also part of what brought Dominic and me on our journey, because it's for me about digging deeper into the essence of life, and solution focus is so helpful. The whole solution focus stance, and also applying the tools in really everyday life or like anything.
Yeah. One thing that I have experienced and studied and now taught connects spiritual journeys with solution-focused perspectives. It revolves around the idea that people go through a developmental process in their faith journey or their spiritual journey, similar to how Erik Erikson talks about developmental stages in the psychosexual developmental journey. And in faith development, most people who grow up in a religious community get to the point where they say, I believe what my church teaches. And too many people stop their journey at that point. And so we see that in our own country, where people say, well, this is what I believe because that's what my church teaches. From a solution-focused perspective, I personally want to move beyond that to say, here's what I do believe from what my church has taught, but here's what I don't believe in the same way. And I have to own that myself. And as we move into that aspect of what I think is a more mature life journey, that's when we begin integrating our own personal aspects, you know, in a spiritual journey. So there are not many people that get to that point of saying, yeah, I believe this, but I don't believe this, but I can still identify with a spiritual tradition. And then that journey can take us to even deeper levels to say, I can actually see truth and validity in every spiritual tradition, and I find a way to then integrate that. So in my journey, yes, I studied Lutheran theology, and I learned about Roman Catholic theologies and approaches that were similar, but then I started studying Native American spiritual traditions and seeing, well, gee, how does that integrate? And then I started studying creation stories from traditions all around the world. So now I'm thinking, well, gee, we have some connections with the Norwegian creation story that features the cow. And I can relate to an African creation story that's based on a lizard. And now I can become more universal in my acceptance and my understanding of people and their own spiritual journeys. And I think we don't get to that point unless we mature in our own journey.
And what a great example of letting people be experts for their life and kind of taking personal agency for their life and integrating kind of all those influences for them to go on their life journey.
Dominic, you said that better than I could have. That was very well stated. Because it is that process of individuation, if we think in those terms, where people actually develop their own unique life stance and life journey.
And isn't that exactly what we do in Solution Focus?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you told us that you've been introduced to Solution Focus through your marriage, your wife, Lorana Nelson, that we had on our podcast last week. When was that and how did that exactly go?
Yes, my exposure came in probably the early 90s. Her acquaintance probably predated that a little bit. She had invited some colleagues to Utah, and I want to say maybe 1995, 1996, and in my counseling center, we had started developing treatment programs for violent offenders, so domestic abuse, intimate partner violence, and there were two people in California that were doing very unique work with violent offenders. In Utah, for instance, when an offender was referred to treatment, it was a mandatory 6-month treatment program. In California, it was a mandatory 1-year treatment program. Well, these folks in California developed an alternative program that was, I think, about a 10-week or a 12-week program. Their completion rate was higher than the 1-year mandated program. Their recidivism rates were markedly lower than the people that went through the 12-week program, the 1-year program, excuse me. And they were using a solution-focused approach. That got my attention. How could we do more effective treatment in a shorter period of time? And what they did was a program that didn't focus on the abuse. It didn't focus on anger management. They only said you had to develop a goal that was going to be a useful goal. So they didn't have to go through an anger management program. They didn't have to learn about the Duluth model of domestic violence and the 8 elements of abuse and power and control. They simply had to have a useful goal. And in that group process, as they worked on moving toward that goal and toward their preferred future, what the men in the program reported was, oh, you know, I'm wanting to be healthier, and so I'm taking up more physical fitness and eating better, and I'm noticing that things with my partner are improving. And so they would then talk about what made those things change, you know, and in a 12-week program, the men were getting more and more excited about how things were changing in their intimate relationships, even though that wasn't their primary goal that they set at the beginning of treatment.
Isn't that awesome?
Yeah. So that got my attention. So we had a number of trainings with our staff that were working with these offenders. Unfortunately, we couldn't shorten the mandated treatment time. The men still had to come to treatment. But we started asking those kinds of questions. What other goal would you like to focus on? that goes beyond just the anger management and learning about power and control and how that can be abusive. We started seeing higher completion rates, lower recidivism. We were asked, we submitted a number of workshop presentations for state conferences, even national conferences. And then we submitted a workshop proposal to an international conference on family violence that was being held in San Diego. It was being held in September of 2001. 9/11 occurred on the second or third day of the conference. Oh. So here we have this terrible act of violence striking, you know, New York City. And we have people from all around the world gathered in San Diego that were experts on family violence. And the conference quickly just scrapped the workshops and the trainings and the presentations and said, San Diego, we're here. How can we be a help to the community? And people from Asia, from Europe, from around North America got involved with supporting the people in San Diego, the leaders in San Diego, for how people could then respond to all of this anxiety and fear about what had just happened on the other side of our country. So I think that the solution-focused work not only had an impact on the clients that we worked with and on our staff, but as we brought these perspectives in treatment to other parts of our state, other parts of our country, and even interactions with people from around the world, that was before EBTA was something that we got involved with. It was before SFBTA had been formed in North America. We were starting to interact and have conversations with people globally.
Wow. EBTA is the European Brief Therapy Association, and SFBTA is the Solution Focused Brief Therapy Association in the United, or North America.
North America, yeah. Right. And we became interested in EBTA. I think our first conference may have been 8 or 9 years ago that we came to Malmo, Sweden. It was amazing to us how, as outsiders, you know, North America, our first international conference, we were so welcomed into the solution-focused community in Europe. And I think our culture in SFBTA in North America was very similar. I said this to my graduate students and to my colleagues. You will never find associations that are more welcoming, no matter what your level of training or expertise is. If you come as a student, you're going to be viewed as having expertise because you're a human being. You know, I feel very emotional and very close to the friendships and the colleagues we've developed, because no other professional association that I've been part of has been as welcoming and as validating and as affirming as SFBTA and EBTA. We're looking forward to coming back to EBTA this year in Sofia, Bulgaria, and we can't wait to see our friends from all around the world who will be gathering there.
And thanks to you guys coming to Europe, we can have the travel that we have now here. We have had so many great encounters with solution-focused people around North America, in the US, now in Canada. Well, it's just one family around the world.
Well, you guys, if we continue this extended metaphor about spiritual journeys, you guys are the missionaries.
it's a bit like that, yeah. Right. Or yeah. I like to see it a bit like that, let's put it that way. Yeah. Yeah, and it's the beauty. There's so much friend power going on in these communities. And just your story reminds me so much on how Dominic met Inzu, and his first encounter with Inzu was just lovely.
It was actually very confusing. I was sitting on this table with this small Asian woman, and I didn't know her. It was at the conference we had to exchange our best hopes from this conference, or for this conference. Well, I said, well, I want to learn from you guys that have a lot of experience. And she said, no. You're new. We want to learn from you. We are doing that for such a long time, and we can't see it right anymore. But you're new.
Wow.
We want to learn. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Isn't that just amazing to say, no, you have something to teach us? Yeah.
I still get goosebumps hearing it. So.
Yeah. Well, and I say this to my clients, that yes, we're going to have an impact on our clients, in our therapy work, we better be prepared that our clients are going to impact us. We're going to learn from our clients as well.
Yeah. I think this is what we heard from others, like Pamela King, for instance. We had her on one of our podcasts previously, and we met her in beautiful Utah. Yeah. So what we heard from Pamela is that you also were a brilliant boss.
Of course I was.
So what do you think did you do that Pamela made see and feel and experience you as a great boss?
Well, I've said this, that I think great bosses are made by great staff. So just like Insu would say to you, Dominic, no, we want to learn from you. I wanted to validate my staff. And Pam was recently out of her graduate program, so she was a new therapist. I wanted to empower my staff and use their best abilities in developing the programs. So I really encourage people to pursue their interests and their passions. Pam was instrumental. She and another therapist developed a very innovative program to treat children who had witnessed violence in their families. And all I did was, I was the boss and I got the money and I paid the bills. I empowered them to develop this program. And I gave them credit. You know, I didn't want to steal any of their credit. So I wanted to really validate and promote them for all of the good work that they did. I also tried to incentivize my staff. So I said, if you develop a training program, you develop a workshop for a conference, our center will pay your registration, no matter where it is. So some of my staff presented at AAMFT conferences, the American Association for Marriage and Family Therapy. They presented at state conferences, both in the marriage and family therapy field and the domestic violence treatment field. And I paid their way to go to San Diego to the International Conference on Family Violence because they developed workshop proposals. They developed the training. And so they were just doing training based on what they had learned and seen happen in their therapy programs and then bringing that to other people. Hmm. So I think I was a good boss in that regard to motivate and give incentives to my staff that would encourage their learning and their teaching.
You said you empowered them. How Yes. did you do that? I think this is a great challenge for a lot of bosses to empower their people.
I can give you one example. Todd was one of my practicum students and then did an internship with us. I don't know if he's practicing solution-focused work today. When he was an undergraduate practicum student, I got a call from a judge, and we had done a lot of work with this judge because she referred the domestic violence offenders. And she said, Victor, do you have a treatment program for shoplifters? And I said, well, what's going on, Judge? And she said, well, I'm getting more and more teenagers that are getting arrested and then referred to the courts, but I don't know where to send them. So I want to know if you have a treatment program. And I said, well, I don't, but I'll have one next week. He said, you will? I said, yes. I said, I will call you in a week. So then I went to Todd and I said, okay, Todd, you're a practicum student. You know how to do literature reviews. You know how to do research. I want you to research treatment programs for shoplifting. We'll have a meeting on Monday. You tell me the elements of these programs, and then I will review that with you, and we will develop the outline of a program that we can give to the court. So he came in, we had our meeting. Thursday, I called the judge back, and I said, okay, Judge, we have our program in place, and we're ready to accept referrals. She was not trained by INSU, but she said, how did you do that? And so I shared, I said, because I've got interns, I've got practicum students, they've done the work on this. And then I went to Todd and I said, are you willing to help run this program? And he said, oh my gosh, that would be such good experience. So he and I ran the program. I supervised him. When he came back to us as an intern after he graduated, I said, Todd, I want you to take this program over. So I gave Todd the credit for developing the program, for actually then putting him in a position where he could develop his clinical skills in leading the program. And I think that's how I empowered people. I would let them do the research. I would let them develop a program. I would put them in a position where I could supervise their initial work, and then I would put them in charge of a program. So I think that's a process for how I could really help bring them into their professional identity.
Wow.
Let me just add one more thing to that. With my graduate student, I invented a word. There's no translation. So you'll have to tell me the German translation. You know, I want our graduate students to become professionals, right? While they're in school, I call them professionals. They haven't gotten there yet. But then I ask them, what are the steps you think you're going to need to learn or accomplish that will move you from a professional to a professional? And so I hear some very interesting things. I have to learn how to be on time. I have to learn how to be prepared. I have to learn how to present myself professionally. I need to learn how to speak in public without melting down from anxiety. I need to learn how to collaborate better with colleagues. So I hear all of these things. Mm-hmm. And we can sort of scale that. So where on a scale of 1 to 10 today are you in becoming a professional? Yeah. So that's I brought the solution focus.
Yeah. I'm just asking myself, it would be cool to have retire programs and to support people in becoming post-fessionals.
I love that concept. So what would a post-fessional look like? Yeah.
What do I have to learn to become a post-fessional?
Yeah. Okay, so here, this is a random connection, and you'll get a sense of my humor here. If we take this conversation back to the spiritual, we start with confessional,
yeah,
and pre-fessional, professional, and post-fessional. I love that sequence. Yeah. We confess what we don't know.
Yeah.
Yes. What we do wrong, and then we become a professional to learn how to become a professional.
Yeah.
What a wonderful conversation today, just to think about even the journey of this conversation taking us in so many different directions and still understanding, this whole philosophy or perspective about focusing on solutions, focusing on strengths, focusing on resilience and preferred futures. I think one of my impressions through EBTA, I've said this to a number of my colleagues here in North America, I think my friends and colleagues in Europe have done a better job in taking solution-focused perspectives beyond the therapy room. Mm-hmm. So more into consulting, more into teaching. I was struck last year in Frankfurt with Peter Szabo's daughter, who sells her children in the classroom. It was like, what, you sell your children? The students wanted to be auctioned off. Why would I want to buy this student? And the students hear all of these positive, affirming things from their peers. So I've done that in my graduate classes. So I've had my students, they don't sell each other, but I say, why would you want to take Brianna to lunch? Hmm. And so the students start bidding on why they want to take Brianna, a graduate student, to lunch. And the students hear all of these validating, affirming compliments about why they are so great in the eyes of their fellow students. So yeah, I think people in Europe are doing a better application of bringing the solution-focused perspectives into business, into consulting, into teaching, not just therapy. And I think that's happening to a degree in North America. My colleagues in China, in helping their university graduates prepare for the job fairs, they developed this process for the students who are graduating to use a solution-focused journey that takes 2 or 3 hours to make them more confident and better prepared to go to the job fairs where they start finding out about careers. And so our friends in China are just doing a remarkable thing to help the university graduates prepare for their careers.
Yeah, so solution focus for the whole life. Every aspect of life relevant. Absolutely. You told us a story that you had a fly fishing shop and that you did more counseling there.
In many ways, that was really true. I was part-time in my therapy practice. It was after I left my position as the counseling center director and went into private practice. I was doing some church consulting, and then a friend of mine and I bought a fly fishing shop. So I was part-time at the fly fishing shop, part-time therapy. And mostly it was men who would come into the fly fishing shop. They would talk about things like, oh, I wish I could get my wife to fly fish. It would be so fun, you know, if we could go fishing together. So what are some things that your wife was really interested in? And we would start talking about things. And one day a man came in and he said, I want to buy my wife a fly rod so she'll go fly fishing with me. Our shop was the first shop in Utah that had a pink fly rod. Fly is about the color of your shirt today, Alfie. And so he bought her the pink fly shop. While he was buying the rod, other men in the shop said, she will never catch a fish with that. That rod is so brightly colored, it'll scare the fish away. Well, they went fishing. He came in the next week and he said, we've got a problem. My wife outfished me with the pink fly rod.
Did the men start buying the pink?
So then one of the men overheard that. And so he came in, he said, I want to buy the pink fly rod. And I said, oh, is it like for your wife? He goes, no. Is it for your girlfriend? No. I said, I want to know why you're buying the pink fly rod. This is a Harley Davidson motorcycle dude with leathers and chains. And he said, well, first of all, who's going to give me crap about a pink fly rod? I'm a Harley dude. And he said, secondly, my brother and my father and I go on a fishing trip each year. And I want to get this pink fly rod so that whoever catches the least fish has to fish with the pink fly rod the next day. I said, great. So he goes on his trip, his father, his brother. The next week, he comes into the fly fishing shop. And I said, well, how did the trip go? And he said, it was a great trip. We went to Colorado. We caught a lot of fish. I said, how did the pink fly rod work out? And he said, actually, after the second day, we had to change the rules. We all enjoyed fishing with the pink fly rod so much, it was whoever caught the most fish got to fish with the pink fly rod. It was fun. We had fun in the fly shop. We did some therapy. We did some counseling, you know, for the guys that came in. But mostly we had fun getting people on the river and getting them connected better with their friends, their families. We even taught children, you know, how to fly fish. So families would go out fishing together. It was fun.
And you see where solution focus can take you.
Yes. Who would have known? Who would have known?
So Vic, we had an awesome conversation from pastoral consulting, counseling to fly fishing, from teaching to spirituality as a main part in the beginning, leadership, you being a boss. Yeah. So what would you say is one thing that our listeners should take away from this podcast that might make the biggest difference for them?
That's such an important question. With my students, my challenge to them is be willing to join a solution-focused community, whether it's in your city, whether it's coming to a conference, whether it's meeting people through podcasts and learning more. Take the step to enter the community because you will be welcomed, you will be accepted, and you will find out you know more than you think you know. And by learning the perspective, the philosophy, the stance, you'll be drawing on your strength, your wisdom, your abilities, which is, I think, the most important part, whether you're a therapist, whether you're a consultant, whether you're a teacher. It's the person that comes out that's going to make the difference. So that's what I would say. It's a very interesting question, though. I like the question.
Thank you very much. And I would love to add that you listeners can even enter the community via email. There is the SFT list where there are a lot of really great and very inspiring discussions going on about solution focus. There is the SOL list, which is also a lot of awesome discussions about applying solution focus in organizations. Right. We will put the links in the resources of this podcast. And of course, we're happy to have you here on our podcast. And we are very much looking forward to meet you all on the various conferences going on around this globe. So we will also for sure add a link to the EBTA conference, to the SFBTA conference. Yeah. That's the one we know. And then we will be at Brief Fest with Haze and Moon, for instance. Oh. So there are a lot of great summer activities going on. There's the Soul Summer Retreat, where people meet in Europe every year in different places to just connect with each other for a week. This year, for the first time, there's a summer retreat in Bali, which is awesome. There's so many great things going on. And also, what we would love to encourage people is to form their own communities by doing intervision groups. There's this SF Book Club hosted by Keiko Yonayama, where people connect via Zoom and we read books. Well, talk about the solution focused book. So there are a lot of really great, great things going on in this community.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
This is what I also experience a lot, and I'm so grateful for is this welcoming community and this willingness to learn from each other, to learn together, and to see that we are on this journey together. And I have never met that many passionate people at one place like on the conferences.
Well said. Yeah.
So joining the community, is this the challenge of the week from you for our listeners?
Here's the challenge of the week. And I had used this with my graduate students. I want to give credit to Plowman. He introduced me to his Good Questions Diary. He developed this diary that helps people just become aware of the kind of questions that they use in their conversations, whether it's day-to-day conversations, whether it's professional conversations. And it's a provocative little diary that helps people start thinking about how they ask questions, the kind of questions that they ask, and then to track, was that a good question? Was that a useful question? So the challenge of the week would be for your listeners to keep a good questions diary, to just incorporate in normal conversations, professional conversations, that awareness of what kind of questions do I ask? What questions are useful and helpful? And to track that for just 1 week. I'll be glad to send a copy of Plowman's PDF that people could use. I think Plowman, he gave us permission to use it as long as, you know, it was complete and it had his credentials on it. But he's trying to get this Good Questions Diary out to the solution focused community. My graduate students love it. It gets them thinking very differently.
So I got to get this book at the SF World Conference in Frankfurt, and I really love it. Yeah. So we are very happy to put that on our website for you listeners to come and download it and to follow Vic's challenge for this week.
Right.
Thank you very much, Vic, for this great conversation.
Pleasure to see you guys again, even though you're, you know, 2,000 miles away or whatever. but we do look forward to seeing you at our conferences coming up. And I just hope you continue to have just a great travel and give Bibiana a big hug from us.
Oh, we will do for sure. I told Rana we are still talking about you when we go to bed, and I tried to tell her the good night story of the girl with the heavy eyes I learned from you.
That's great.
So Vic, you inspired me a lot when we met each other the first time at the EBTA conference. You inspired me a lot when we met each other in Santa Fe, and you just keep inspiring me, and I'm very grateful for that.
Mm-hmm.
And
thank you.
Dear listeners out there, please let us know what inspired you with this podcast and comment on our website, which is www.sfontour.com/simplyfocuspodcast, and then go to episode 13. What inspires you might make a huge difference for someone else. So please share and comment, because this should really be a field where we can learn from each other, where we can encourage each other to move on our solution-focused journey, our journey with a focus on a life in joy and ease. So we highly appreciate your comments. And you are also very welcome to pose your questions. Vic will be available.
Absolutely.
Thank you very much for that as well. So he will come and drop by on our website to check your comments. And if you have questions, if you want to let him and us know what inspired you, we're very excited to hear that. Thank you.
And to inspire others, please feel free to share our podcast on various platforms. And you can also subscribe when you come to our website on Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Blueberry, and iTunes. So thank you very, very much, and goodbye.
Great week, and see you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.